Last case, case 10-2245, Disciplinary Counsel versus David Nitzkoff. And I believe that Ms. Brown is present and no one is appearing for the respondent. Ms. Brown?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Chief Justice O'Connor. My name is Lori Brown on behalf of the Office of Disciplinary Counsel, Relator in this matter. Relator is here this morning and filed objections in this case on one issue, and that is the issue of the appropriate sanction for David Nitzkoff based on his misconduct. The board recommended 6 months suspension, which is an entirely inappropriate sanction given the misconduct and the fact that this is a default case and this court's need to protect the public. Relator believes that the case law supports disbarment, which was our original recommendation, or at the very least, an indefinite suspension of Mr. Nitzkoff's license. Mr. Nitzkoff was disciplined based on a three-count amended complaint. The first two counts were his misconduct with regard to neglect, essentially abandonment of his responsibilities in the Jack Gordon estate and trust. The second count was his failure to inform his clients that he does not carry malpractice insurance. And the third count was a failure to cooperate with Relator's investigation of an overdraft in Mr. Nitzkoff's IOLTA account. The third count was added when the complaint was amended. The cases that are relied upon by the Master Commissioner and then the board in the default matter are not default judgments by, you know, they're not default decisions by this court. So they're completely inapposite to the case that we have before us today.
Counsel, it's my understanding that there was a civil action taken and that too resulted in a default judgment for almost $500,000 against this attorney?
That's correct, $451,000. And I'm glad you bring that up, Your Honor, because his conduct in the malpractice case is nearly identical to his conduct in the disciplinary case. As the Master Commissioner pointed out in his opinion, which was subsequently adopted by the board, Mr. Nitzkoff did not answer Relator's letters of inquiry, the first or the second. He was then subpoenaed to the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. He did come for a deposition. Similarly, in the malpractice case, through counsel, Mr. Nitzkoff initially was involved in the case. He didn't participate in discovery, but there was some involvement. Then Mr. Nitzkoff came back into the malpractice case and filed a 60B motion long after the judgment that you spoke of.
So his involvement did not involve an answer in the civil case?
No, that's
except
correct.
Did he do a pro se 60B?
He did.
Were you present for his deposition?
I took his deposition, Your Honor.
Did you have any indications that there was a problem with mental health or substance abuse?
He gave responses to some of the questions, and I believe it's Exhibit 23. I apologize. I don't know what exhibit. The full transcript is an exhibit in the case. He gave answers that indicated that he believed he was depressed, but he wasn't clear about whether he was depressed about the whole situation, whether he had been depressed and then neglected the case, so there was no causation established through his testimony. The deposition was very cordial. I mean, when you look at it, you will see that I was trying to get information from him that would indicate to me, since he had appeared for the deposition, I completely expected him to then participate in the disciplinary case. So I wanted to determine where he would go with his evidence, what he believed the facts to be. And he provided some information. There's discussion at the end of the deposition. The questions are, so what will you do next? And his answers were proactive. In other words, he was going to file a 60B motion at that time. Well, as it turned out, he didn't file it for nearly a year. In fact, until after Relator amended its complaint to add the IOLTA violation.
But Ms. Brown, did he himself did not introduce any evidence of addiction or mental illness? Because when I looked at the report from the board, it has in here that there was an absence of dishonest or selfish motive, so I don't know if they're alleging incompetence. Then they say there was full and free disclosure, yet he didn't really participate, and they cite that as an aggravating factor. So I'm a little confused as to how the board got here, because their mitigation and aggravating factors seem very inconsistent.
They're entirely inconsistent, and I would echo your concern. Quite frankly, I have no idea how they got there. I mean, based on the case law, this court has said a number of times that when you have neglect and a failure to cooperate, the appropriate sanction, absent significant mitigation, in a default case, which, you know, begs the question, can there be mitigation in a default case, is an indefinite suspension. So at the very least, that's where Mr. Nitzkoff should be. And where this case should be decided. Now, whether it is appropriate for disbarment is a matter for this court to consider.
Do we know if he's practicing? I'm sorry. Do we know? Because he's not appeared.
He has not appeared in this disciplinary case other than under subpoena in July of 2009 at a deposition at Relator's office.
So we don't know if he's actually engaging in the active practice of law.
During his deposition, he testified that he was engaged in the practice of law. I have to believe that he is, based upon the fact that he has an IOLTA, which was in overdraft status, albeit for $44, not a large amount of money, but nevertheless in overdraft status, in 2010. Is he practicing in 2011? I can't answer that.
Counsel, could you go back and describe for us his demeanor at the deposition? I know you said it was cordial and all of that, but I mean, this is a little puzzling. You know, always it's a little puzzling when somebody doesn't cooperate. It's less puzzling when they're cantankerous, you know, about it.
His demeanor, Your Honor, was entirely appropriate. It was a subpoena ducis tecum that commanded him to appear. He brought the documents that were requested on CD discs for us to print off. He downloaded them from his own computer, testified about his activities in doing so. His thought processes appeared to be rational, although inconsistent. When you evaluate the deposition, I think you will notice that who he believed he represented changes throughout the deposition. What he believed his obligations were to that client or clients changes throughout the deposition, which are certainly matters that would have been developed during discovery in the disciplinary case. He, for example, denied that he promised the trustee that he would take care of any interest and penalties from the IRS. He denied that during his deposition. That would, of course, have been a matter of credibility for a panel to listen to the testimony of the trustee about those communications and then to listen to Mr. Nitzkoff about those communications as well. But in the absence of any further participation, I, of course, don't have a crystal ball, but I will tell you that when he left the deposition, having had a conversation with him about the next steps, as I said to Chief Justice O'Connor, I fully anticipated that he would participate in the form of filing an answer and or asking for our assistance in some way, shape, or form. But there comes a point, Your Honor, where we have followed GovBar Rule 5, and you know, we had already gone out of our way to subpoena him. So,
Counsel, at that appearance under subpoena, was that when his statement was that the silver lining here is that the trust made a lot of money in the stock market because he didn't take the $300,000+ out and pay the IRS?
That's when he made the statement, and it's a little bit difficult to follow his analysis, but my read of the deposition is that he was completely unaware of the total value of the estate upon Mr. Gordon's death in September of 2005, that it wasn't until time passed, in fact, the IRS filing deadlines passed, that he realized that the estate was substantial enough at the time, I believe the IRS limit was $2 million. It was well beyond that. So his testimony then was, well, it was really okay because it had continued to accumulate in value, even though at the time I didn't know it was. But in retrospect, he was trying to essentially justify waiting by saying that we waited and it increased in value. That's how I read his answer, and his deposition. That's apparently how the master commissioner read it as well.
Now, do you know if this size of the estate was a surprise to everybody or just Mr. Nitzkoff and was it Mr. Frankel?
I do not know whether it was a surprise to Mr. Frankel. The evidence shows clearly that Mr. Frankel was Mr. Gordon's CPA for a number of years. He had prepared his tax returns. So my assumption is that Mr. Frankel was privy to, for example, there were investments with Wachovia, then Wachovia. So he was privy to the Wachovia statements and or interest income. So Mr. Frankel would probably have known. Now, on the other hand, Mr. Frankel would not have known what Mr. Gordon's debts were, the decedent's debts were. So the net value, there was a will and an inter vivos trust. So my understanding is there were very few assets in the estate, some old cars. Other than that, not much. Everything was actually in the trust at the time of the death. So there were two separate matters, probating the estate and making sure that the trust was distributed.
Was Nitzkoff the attorney that created the trust?
He was not.
It was the other attorney he originally wrote to get the papers?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Ms. Brown, you started by indicating that the matter before the court concerned the appropriate sanction.
Yes, Your Honor.
That the board had recommended a 6-month suspension, and your office was recommending a disbarment, or at the least an indefinite suspension. Indefinite suspension.
Correct.
If the court would agree, I don't know what our court will do, connection with an indefinite suspension, should there be conditions put on that?
I believe there should be conditions. However, let me first start with the appropriateness of an indefinite suspension. Mr. Nitzkoff, as you know, would be required to prove by clear and convincing evidence that he is fit to be readmitted.
Yes.
So in and of itself, those are conditions.
But there's a substantial judgment has been taken for interest and penalty, I think.
That's correct.
Among other.
Right, and there is a...
And you suggest there's a problem with an IOLTA account?
There is apparently a problem with the IOLTA, whether it is simply, as we often see, a mathematical error that caused the overdraft. I don't have any reason to suspect that Mr. Nitzkoff is misusing client funds. Let's say that. We don't have evidence of that.
Well, could it be if he's inactive that he hadn't had any money in it and the bank's sending him a service charge every month and it went underwater at some point?
That is certainly possible. And the reason that it was even added as count three is because he completely failed to cooperate. You'll notice that count three is a failure to cooperate, not an IOLTA issue. We did not subpoena his bank records.
But his basic problem is a malpractice problem, is it not?
That's correct, which goes back to Justice O'Donnell's question of the $451,000 judgment. Mr. Nitzkoff's deposition testimony, as well as my knowledge of the judgment holder's efforts to collect, indicate that it would be very difficult. However, as this court often faces the dilemma of, do you allow someone to be readmitted with that kind of a restitution issue facing, and it begs the question because that is their profession, should they not be allowed to practice it?
Well, do we take people out for malpractice?
Please?
Do we take people out of the practice for committing malpractice? I didn't think we generally did.
For neglect, for failing to cooperate, for failing to communicate. There are numerous violations in this case, Your Honor. But so so there are violations of the code, and that is for that is what Mr. Nitzkoff faces sanction for, in addition to failing to cooperate. Now, on the other hand, to answer your question, the direct answer is not always.
Did he have malpractice insurance?
He did not, nor did he fail to inform his clients that he did not. So he is uncollectible, maybe too strong a word, because I don't have actual knowledge of that, but making his reinstatement conditioned upon paying a $451,000 judgment may make it, in effect, a disbarment. So it is a very difficult, perhaps there is a way to ensure that he makes payments. Perhaps there is a way to get him to participate and negotiate a smaller judgment amount. I know there were some settlement negotiations. That's a matter of record in his deposition before he defaulted in the malpractice case.
But no prior disciplinary, to your knowledge?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our opinion. Marshal, will you adjourn court, please?